You're listening to the show that talks about stuff the others can't, don't, or won't. The Drew Marshall Show on Joy 1250. Soldiers, they keep on warring. World, you keep on turning. But it will not be too long.
Ashley Cleveland, Grammy Award-winning recording artist extraordinaire. I tell you, this lady is that rare thing, you know, the woman who sings like a woman, finally, a woman with grit and passion, a woman who's not afraid to follow her longings into places both light and dark. She can roar and wail with maximum soul wattage. Her voice inspires regular comparisons to locomotives and hurricanes. That's got to be nice. But she can also be soft, tender, sly, wistful, open-hearted, melancholy, wise, seductive, and wry. And she's on the Drew Marshall Show today. AshleyCleveland.com is the website. And Ashley, thank you very, very much. I got to apologize right off the bat for taking so long to find out about you and this illustrious career of yours.
Oh, no worries.
Well, seriously, I thought I knew all the cool cats out there, but apparently I missed one.
Lovely. I appreciate that.
I'm trying to figure out, you know, the comparisons are always out there, and I guess what struck me is maybe if Carly Simon, Aretha Franklin, and Bonnie Raitt all had a kid.
Well, that would be great.
That would be you.
Well, you know, man, all three of those women have had quite an influence on me, so that I wouldn't, I mean, that's great to have that kind of a comparison. Thank you.
Well, you are a perfect fit for this show. My spiritual influences over the years have tended to be guys who were too Christian for the real world and not Christian enough for the Jesus people. And I don't know, guys
that
like
that would be me.
Yeah, that's you. like I'm thinking about guys like Larry Norman and Mike Iaconelli, and I think you fit quite nicely into that category.
Oh, well, thank you. Both of those. I would imagine those guys are having a wonderful time in heaven as we speak. But Larry Norman was really the first Christian artist that I was ever exposed to, and I discovered him when I was in college and bought everything that he ever put out. And met Mike Iaconelli probably 15 years ago and loved him as well. So those two guys that are really deeply missed.
They are. They are. And the greatest, I mean, the thing I loved about those guys is they were too much of a risk to invite into a Promise Keeper or Focus on the Family night.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
actually, when I met Mike Iaconelli, he invited me to Youth Specialties, which, for any listener that's not familiar, is actually an annual conference for pastors, and with a particular emphasis on youth pastors, but it's such a great conference that it attracts all pastors, and it's just a really wonderful thing. And when I went and did it, I was doing the music kind of opening for Annie Lamott. So I thought it showed great taste and also great courage to have Annie, because she you never know what she's going to feel led to say.
That's right.
One way or the other, but she was fantastic. And it was a great treat to meet not only Mike, but also Annie.
Here's a quote from you. I don't ever think in terms of what is God teaching me or doing in my life in particular time frame. I think that he is continually revealing himself and as much of his glory as I can handle at any given time, while simultaneously exposing my own intense desire to sit on the throne and run the show. Really, what I think about the life of faith is that every day you dive into a profound mystery that refuses to be defined or to adhere to a slogan or soundbite, and the only thing that I can say for sure about last year, this year, or next year is Christ and Christ alone. Stellar, yeah. Stellar quote.
Well, that's great. I remember saying it, so but it sounds good.
Well, you were born in Knoxville, Tennessee.
I was.
And around what age did you move out to San Francisco area with your mom?
I was seven. So that was like going to Mars, really.
It still is, actually.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I mean, at least I have a context for it now. At that time, I was, you know, all I knew was the great state of Tennessee, so, which was a good 15 to 20 years socially in the other direction from California. I mean, there was really no relationship between the two as far as cultural, you know, markers or anything where I could identify. It was just crazy. It was like, you know, it really was like going to a foreign country.
Growed up going to church, doing church, more of a social scenario from what I understand as far as your family is concerned. I grew up in a family that went to church for similar reasons. Wasn't that fun learning about the performance-based God?
Well, not really, because, you know, that was actually a bar I never could manage to hit. So, I will say this. My mother did have a really deep, authentic faith. It was just that it gets really cloudy in the South because, you know, church really is a part of your social identification, and so it was hard to... one thing I really did appreciate very much about California was, you know, there were some all different types of expressions of faith, obviously, out there. But if people were in a church out there, it was typically because they'd had an encounter with God, and it wasn't because nice families went to church. And I really liked that, you know. Whereas where I came from, everybody had some kind of a church affiliation, but it didn't necessarily have any indication of faith. So.
Ashley, did you ever wish you'd spent more than just a couple of years at University of Tennessee?
No. Not in any way.
Kind of
I think
you
if
might
I
say
stayed
that.
Any longer. Well, I was a terrible student, first of all, and I'm sure now, you know, even now, even today, you know, I'm almost 52 now, and when I think about well, if the bottom dropped down and I had to find a new career, which clearly I'm not trained or capable of anything other than music, and I had to go back to school, I would just be in a terrible state because I hated school, and I hate the idea of it even today, which, you know, the only reason I'm really candid with you about it is because this is airing in Canada, because I don't want my kids to hear me, but because I want them to go to, you know, it's like, do as I say, not as I do. But
yeah.
But they're actual, two of my children are profound academics, which is that's enigma to me. I don't get it. I can't even help them with their homework. But I'm a tactile learner, and I always have been, and there was no, you know, I didn't know that term when I was a child or when I was in school. I just knew that for whatever reason, I was not able to, you know, to track with the classroom experience and retain any of that. And so, you know, I was just about as mediocre a student as you could find. And so what ended up happening, by the time I got to college, I had discovered alcohol. So I spent a lot more time drinking and playing in clubs than I ever did attending a classroom. So it was really a loss, a waste of my father's money and a real lost opportunity on me.
Well, playing guitar and singing in clubs in and around the San Francisco area during the late 70s, early 80s, I mean, other than being a great way to pay your dues, that must have taken its toll on you, though.
Well, it was a great thing. The downside of it was that I was really developing a severe addiction to drugs and alcohol at the time, which had nothing to do with playing in clubs, but certainly was enhanced by that environment. I still learned quite a bit, and I learned a lot about performing and a lot about being able to do shows by myself. I just wish I had been more present in my own life, because I think I would have gotten a whole lot more out of it. You know, it just seemed like there was a long period of time where my primary thing was to mess up my life and then do damage control. So, you know, and then So, but I will say that, you know, I learned in a great place, and so by the time I got into recovery and started really pursuing music in earnest, and when I got to Nashville and started playing in clubs there, you know, I was good to go.
Come unto me, all thee that labor and heavy laden, I'll give you rest. I think something like that. I mean, that's a great verse for you and all your friends who are either dead, dying, or in recovery.
Yes, isn't that the truth, Drew? I mean, and really, I have to say that, you know, at the bottom of that well, which was mercifully shallow for me because I lived through it, you know, was really my first true encounter of the living God. And it was such a kind-hearted, tender, merciful encounter. I was just so undone by the tenderness of it that I thought, well, clearly two things are happening here. Number one, I have no idea who you are. And number two, if this experience is a taste of who you are, I'm in.
Yeah, the fear of some sort of bizarre supernatural discipline or, you know, retribution for crimes done has never really been a motivating factor for me to turn my life around. The one thing that does undo me and make me reflect deeper or look back in hindsight and run from things that I know darn well have messed me up has been this bizarre concept of unconditional love.
Yeah, and it's very it is a bizarre concept. I mean, who can know?
This was a favorite verse of yours, and apparently the translation that you grew up having to learn. King James?
Love King James.
You still loving on it?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
You're weird.
You're not the first person to point that out.
I can't even begin to imagine what it would be like to wake up one day, you're an addict, you're pregnant, and you're all alone. And you're only in your early 20s.
Yeah.
Like, what scares you the most looking back in that time?
Oh, man. Everything scared. I was terrified of living. I was terrified of dying. I think I really thought when I finally got pregnant, I thought, oh, this is going to be this will be the death knell. This will be it. And really, you know, when I think about, you know, in this country, there's such a terrible, terrible divide in our culture over the abortion issue, and it becomes such a flag for the evangelicals. And I have to say, as somebody that has been there, that it really... It was only my experience of the love of Christ that gave me the courage to walk through that. And the love of Christ came first. And so, I have to say, wherever you fall in that, tread lightly, because it for many, many women, it's not just some selfish act. It's overwhelming. It's overwhelming, the idea of having this life and being alone and trying to figure out how you're going to do this. And to be honest with you, I had no idea how I was going to do it. I just knew that I believed that there was a God that loved me. But I also was really afraid that I was still going to be punished for, you know, all my crimes, which were numerous, and I thoroughly deserved to be punished. I'll say that right out front. I had made some horrible, horrible choices repeatedly, and I really expected the boom to be lowered on me when the baby was born. I expected to, you know, just, I expected her to be compromised, and I just expected to be punished. I guess that's the only way to say it. And you know, when she was born, she was just so beautiful and so perfect, and I felt like the Lord just kind of pulled back the curtain for a second and said, see, you just don't know. I'm not who you think I am. And it's really been that experience of him has been just so repetitious throughout my whole walk of faith. Every time I think I know, it's like something, he surprises me and says, oh, no, 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 don't assume that you know. And so I just always go back to the same thing that's in that quote, because it's really true. It's Christ and Christ alone, and beyond that, I don't know. But that has been enough to give me life. And my life is so different, and so, I mean, it's beyond anything I would have even had the guts to ask for.
We are speaking with Ashley Cleveland, and many of you have known about her for a lot longer than I have. I can't even remember who it was I was doing research on, and I went to your label's website and thought, I'm going to give this gal a listen, and I was blown away. Seriously, I called whoever it was, you know, at this label, and just went off. And I'm sure they must have thought I was just some little, you know, I don't know, teenage fan or something. I just sounded like a babbling idiot. But I just, anyway, I'm glad you're on the show. Thanks.
Thank you. Now, you'll have to forgive my ignorance too. Where exactly are you located?
We are in a little place called Toronto. It's a country called Canada.
Well,
north.
You know, Toronto is one of my favorite cities, and I'll tell you something. My first record was actually quite popular in Canada. It came out, you know, way back in 1991, and so because of the popularity we experienced in Canada, we did a tour of the entire country, starting, I guess, over in Ottawa and going all the way to Vancouver.
Wow.
And playing many points in between, and it was tremendous. And Toronto kind of blew my mind, not only the beauty of the city, but I have never been in a city that size that was so clean. I couldn't believe it.
We tell a story here. I've done some work in the film industry, and there's a story of a film crew, big production, doing some kind of shooting down in Toronto, and it was supposed to be down in New York. And so that what they'd done was they brought in a whole bunch of garbage and just littered all over the place, right? And then they broke, I think, probably about 3 in the morning, and they were going to come back the next day and continue filming. Anyway, the street cleaners came along and cleaned up the set. So they weren't too impressed with that.
That's fantastic. Well, it was, I mean, I just thought, you know, you guys have been on the, you know, a lot more together with your environmental policies than we have for quite some time. But I just thought, you know, there's such, it's a beautiful country anyway, but just the pride of ownership is quite evident. And really, it was, I never forgot it. Well, I was just kind of knocked out by that.
You know, you've said that you drank to feel different.
Yes.
Not necessarily to numb the reality that you're in, but just to feel different. Can you pull that apart?
Well, I just didn't want to be who I was. And I didn't, you know, and when I, you know, it was like I kept sort of my internal life in the margins as far as, you know, I didn't address anything of, you know, depth that had any depth to it in my life, because it was just too painful. And that's so, for me, drinking, I could be somebody different, and I wouldn't, and it would just perpetuated not dealing with my life and keeping the feelings that I had, you know, sort of submerged in, or pickled, or whatever you want to call it. So that I didn't have to deal with those, because by the time, you know, I was really in my early 20s, I had quite a buildup of feeling, and I just hadn't, I didn't want to look at any of it.
How have you managed your addictive personality, Ashley? I mean, you know, this might be prying in a public interview like this, but how often have you relapsed?
I had one 6-year relapse that I was hospitalized in 1984, and I stayed there for a good little while, and then got into recovery and some therapy. But I was a little, you know, I wasn't very wholehearted in my recovery efforts. I had kind of a, you know, a problem with groups of people that I didn't know. I didn't want to be in groups of people that I didn't know. And so, you know, opportunities to be in a recovery environment, I sort of avoided those. And but I did get some help, and I did manage to stay sober for about 7 years. And then when my husband and I got married in 1991, I just decided that I'd had so much therapy and treatment and what have you that surely I was cured by now, and I too could be a moderate drinker. And, you know, for most alcoholics, moderation is like the pearl of great price. You know, we all harbor this hidden hope that maybe we too can be among the moderate. And so, and my husband is a very moderate person. He's not an addict. And I got this idea that I could, you know, have a glass of wine here and there. And that started a 6-year relapse that was largely, it was interesting to me in that most of that time was controlled drinking. I rarely drank to excess, but it was the thing that finally convinced me that I was truly an alcoholic, in that it was all I ever thought about. And from the moment my eyes opened in the morning till I shut them at night, it was this constant dialogue about, well, I had two glasses of wine yesterday. Would anybody notice if I had two again today? Or maybe I could get away with three? Or could I do this? It was that 24/7, and it just never ended.
Obsessive internal monologue.
Yeah, so one day, and then occasionally I would drink the way I really wanted to drink, and all hell would break loose. But I didn't do that very often during that 6 years, but I knew there would come a time when I wouldn't be able to control it.
Did you coke up again in that six-year stint?
I haven't had any cocaine since 1984. But
good for you.
But that was probably just because it wasn't available to me for whatever reason in those 6 years. You know, I just had sort of changed my life, and I just didn't. During a period where everybody I knew was kind of into recovery, even people that ultimately realized they weren't really addicts, they just wanted to be part of what was happening.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, it just wasn't around. I'm sure if it had been around, I would have gladly participated, but the alcohol was plenty. And I'm glad, you know, because at that time I had three children and, you know, still have three children, and I just, you know, it was bad enough that I was contending with what I was contending with. But one day, it was a great thing in terms of, you know, part of my big thing was to prove to everyone that I was being moderate. So I would just have this big construct in my life where I would have all these things to say, no, 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 look, I'm being a responsible citizen. See, I'm doing this. You know,
yeah,
I kept
yeah.
my career going. I was taking good care of my kids, and I was getting up every morning and doing a devotional. But what ended up happening after a while, you know, I'm not one who feels like the Lord speaks audibly to me on a regular basis, but in this instance, I felt that he did, and I felt that every time I would get up in the morning and start praying, I felt like he would cut in on my prayer and say, you know, nothing is really going to change in your life until you look at your drinking. And so one day, and it, you know, it wasn't because I'd been to jail. It wasn't because all, you know, the big disaster had happened or I'd done something heinous. I just woke up one day and thought, I cannot live like this one more day. And so I went to went to an AA meeting, picked up a white chip which represents a desire to stop drinking, and it's been a little over 11 years.
What chip are you on now?
Well, 11, I guess. 11 well, years.
Yeah, does it have a color to it? Is it a
No, after you get into heavy metal after you hit a year point. So you get into, you know, their medallions, but I always carry one in my wallet, just and you know, it's an incredible. I have a little box at home with every chip I ever got in it, and it's a great reminder of the journey. But it's also, to me, it's a reminder that it's a daily affair. You never quite cured.
No. Ashley Cleveland, let's talk about musical influences, as people do with your interviews. Stones, Zeppelin, The Who, Beatles, Elton John, Steely Dan, Van Morrison, Aretha Franklin, Stevie Wonder, Neil Young, Joni Mitchell, James Taylor, CSN, Neil Young.
You and all of the above.
You and I have the same CD collection.
Yeah, the 70s. Late 60s and the 70s. That was it for me, man.
Yeah, same thing here. Have you been to any decent gigs lately?
Hear other people?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Have I heard anybody lately? You know, I mean, you get into playing all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't go. Now, Kenny, my husband, we have a 16-year-old son who is a huge music lover and concert goer. So Kenny he'll take him to, they just went up to Indianapolis to see Radiohead, which they thought was amazing. And, but, you know, I guess, I don't know, I've kind of crossed over. I'm one of those NPR nerds that occasionally I'll go hear a friend play, but it's like if you play music all the time and you travel all the time, to me, it's wonderful to come home and just stay home. I'm sort of dull.
Yeah, you're a home girl now.
I am.
We have some stellar gigs in the last little bit that I've been up to. I mean, I see James Taylor fairly regularly, and his release October Road just blew me away.
He's so wonderful. I've seen James many times too, and he's just amazing. His music occupies a place in my life where I'll go see him, and the first note he sings, I just burst into tears. I don't know what that's about, but it represents a whole era or something.
That's what happens to me when I hear bagpipes.
Well, that too. Are you Scottish?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. I know.
I'm Scottish turned Irish, so there's a double whammy there.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, I bet you just,
I was in Scotland just a couple of weeks ago for a couple of weeks. Now, here's another gig I saw recently, Crosby, Stills, Nash. I took my son. It was the first big gig he and I went to because he's, you know, of age at a lot of these places now. And I tell you, Stephen Stills was struggling vocally.
Yeah.
It's like one shot too many. He just, you know what I mean?
I know. It's so hard to see that happen. But those guys, and particularly, you know, I learned how to play guitar listening to Steve Stills and Neil Young, and those guys they had such a huge influence on me. I mean, I just will ever be grateful to them. They were so inspiring to me.
Well, David Crosby still was absolutely, his vocal tones were right on. The problem was remembering the lyrics for him. That's always a tough tough one.
Well, you know, I met David Crosby years ago, and when I met him, he was living on the street.
Oh, really?
And he was, when he was really ill in his own addiction, he lived on the streets for a while, and I was playing at a club in Mill Valley, California, which is in Marin County.
Yeah, I know Mill Valley well.
Yeah, and this guy was sitting at the bar that was clearly had not seen a shower in quite some time and looked horrible.
And that was him?
And it was him.
Wow.
And we sat and talked for a little, but it was heart-wrenching. Yeah. I mean, you just think, oh, my gosh, how could this happen? But it does.
Oh, yeah, it happens to the best. Well, let's talk about Butterfly Kisses guy. I mean, he's disappeared off the face of the planet every once in a while. What's his name again?
Bob Carlisle.
Yeah, Bob Carlisle. I mean, he struggled. He struggled bad, you know?
A lot of people have.
Yeah. Hey, what kind of acts are you playing these days?
When I'm on the road, I have two Gibsons that they gave me years and years ago. They're wonderful, but I have this a 1965 Martin D35 that I use when I make records.
Oh,
but I'll tell you, that's the way. It's such a wonderful instrument, and it's all beat up looking. The guy that, you know, it was in some closet for years, and my husband Kenny is a endorses Paul Reed Smith guitars, which have always been electric guitars and wonderful guitars. That's his main thing that he loves to play. But we went and played for a Paul Reed Smith convention, and he has just now started making acoustics. And I played one of the prototypes, which was about as great a guitar as I've played in a long time. So I may have to look into that.
Oh, man. Still doing a lot of open tuning, the dadgad?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know that many chords, so I have to change tuning so it sounds interesting.
Have you, that's what I do, that's how I learned, I never learned real chords. I get made fun of a lot. I play a lot of stuff in E, and
yeah.
Which is great for a lot of blues licks that I'm doing. But anyway, you've sung backup on over 300 albums, which is incredible. And I think that's earned you this quote, because I know the industry junk you've had to put up with. The simplest thing takes six men and a boy to accomplish in the record business. That's a classic quote.
Well, it is. I mean, the music business is, you know, it's not the music business if it's not ridiculously complex and meaningless.
And unnecessarily so.
Yes.
But, I mean, backup for so many people. Let's see if you can remember this one.
Oh, yeah. That's a great one.
John Hiatt, Paper Thin. I think this is on Arsenio Hall. And that's some kind of outfit you're wearing. We're doing a little YouTube thing here in the studio.
It's a catalog of terrible outfits and bad hair days, I'm telling you.
Have a listen to this, folks. John Hiatt pumping it out. And you're going to recognize this backup singer real soon. I got to say, the outfit is tremendous. The hair is sharp. takes me right back. Have a listen. Man, you're even doing these funky moves on stage that I haven't seen in about 20 years. I was waiting for you to break into the robot there or something. You know?
I know. That's as close to dancing as I could ever get.
Yeah. Well, you really connected with John Hiatt. I mean, you were a single mom. He was a single dad, and, you know.
Hiatt was just great to me. He, you know, when he moved to Nashville, I was already a huge fan, and he was also a recovering person and was just a great he was a great encouragement to me about, and really was into the music I was doing, but also included me in his own musical life at a time when he was so incredibly high profile. That whole tour was just kind of amazing. You know, we got to do things that it just never occurred to me I would be doing, like Saturday Night Live. And we did Letterman.
Yeah.
We did Austin City Limits.
Oh, man.
And the Arsenio thing. And I can't remember if we did Jay Leno or not, but it just went on and on and on. And it was just a great, it was a tour with Robert Cray, who was also really doing well at that time because he'd had a big hit on the radio, and so we were playing these wonderful theaters and really great audiences. It was just a lot of it was a lot of fun. Hiatt just got inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame, and rightly so.
Huh. You know, I often wonder if President Nixon and Mr. Ed are the one and the same, just because they sound so similar. But there's a segue, and quite an odd one, into the fact that I see some unbelievable similarities, so much so I wonder if they're the same person. Kenny Greenberg, your husband, and Joe Satriani.
Oh.
You know?
Well, Kenny, now I don't know how long ago Joe Satriani shaved his head. I know that Kenny shaved his in 1992, maybe. So he was one of the first guys in Nashville to just decide that fringe wasn't going to get it. And he always kind of really admired what the guys in the black culture were doing. And so when they started shaving their heads, he just decided that had to be the coolest thing going.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. Well, Rebecca, she's got to be, your daughter, she's going to be in her 20s now. Is she 26?
26.
Yeah, 26.
Henry's 16 and Lily's 13.
10-year difference between Henry and Rebecca.
Yes, I've been raising children for a long time.
Rebecca still have quite the ear for music?
Well, she's a great music lover. I don't think she would be a musician. That's kind of not her thing. Henry, he's into acting. He plays drums, but I think it's more just for fun. My youngest child, Lily, is
she's
the one
a singer.
That's really gifted.
Yeah,
she's really, really good. And even more, I mean, she's got a wonderful voice, and it's different from mine, but she's a writer. And that's, I love what she writes. She's a real deep, she's kind of an old soul. It's fun to see that. You know, it's always fun to see your kids kind of emerge as their own selves. You know?
Henry, we all thought Henry was going to be the writer. I mean, that little ditty that he took part in at age 5. And I was waiting for Henry to come out with his top 10 hit, Snot Blossom.
Yeah, no kidding.
You
me
know?
Too. But he just wants to be an actor. He's totally, he's very focused on that. So we'll see.
Huh.
You know, I went and saw him in Shakespeare the other night in Romeo and Juliet.
Wow.
He's doing his thing.
I'm going to be 50 next year. This was written a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And for whatever time I have here, I want to be as transparent and real and authentic as I can be. I feel no motivation to go out and recite the 4 spiritual laws to people just to be doing it. I feel strongly, however, that I have encountered a transforming God who has absolutely changed my life and gives me a level of freedom and beauty that I didn't know was possible. I want to try to express that in my daily life, not just in my career, but on every level. I'm always thinking about what it is to be bold, but I also want to be authentic, not just out there promoting the gospel because I think I should. I'm not worried about fitting in anymore. I'm more worried about being true to what I believe, who I believe I am. You're a pretty deep lady.
Oh, thank you.
I like it. So you're a lot more than just muscle and blood. Amy Lou Harris said that about you, and here's a little quote from Amy Grant. Grit, angst, and passion. She sings the way most of us feel.
Oh, well, Amy's always been a great champ for me. She's a good egg.
She's a neat gal. We had a brief little catch up with her up when she was playing Casino-Rama up here in north of Toronto, and she forgot to pack black socks, dress socks or something like that, and so she came out in her bare feet to greet us.
Like her.
That's just so her.
It is so her.
Somebody had gone out to Walmart to get some black socks, and she just said, hey, I'm here. There it is. Neat lady. Well, here's the CDs, folks, and we're going to say goodbye to Ashley here. Before the daylight shot, Ashley Cleveland. I love the artwork. I'm just admiring it. Queen of Soul is a kicking little tune. I had a hard time trying to figure out what was I going to bring you in on and what am I going to go out on. There's just a lot of good tunes. And then Second Skin is another one with just a classic shot of you in the car in the back there. That kind of won me over pretty quick right there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, you know, it's these last hurrahs before, you know, gravity has its final way with me.
But I think we're going to have to go out on a Neil Young cover that you did. My son and I were driving somewhere, and we had the CD on, and we kind of looked at each other and went, is that Neil Young? And no, it was Ashley Cleveland. Why'd you pick this song? Just because of how the drugs messed you up?
No, actually, there was another album, and there was an organization that formed in Nashville with the acronym SHARE, which means Songs of Hope and Recovery for Everyone. And the SHARE organization, their whole hope was to use music to promote awareness and to maybe raise money to provide treatment for people that needed treatment and couldn't afford it or didn't have insurance, but also to reduce the stigma, because in the South, you know, and I think everywhere to some extent, people really don't understand addiction as an illness. And so it was all of those things, and so they put together a record of the first, project they've done is a country record, actually, where it was mostly country artists, and all the songs kind of represented how it was, what happened, and what it's like now, which is sort of the process of recovery. And so they wanted, their only criterion was that each song on the record had to have a Nashville connection. And so they wanted to use Needle in the Damage Done, but they didn't have a Nashville connection for Neil Young's version of it. So they asked me, since I'm in Nashville, and they knew that he was probably my biggest influence, and that I was a great fan and follower of Neil Young and his music, would I do a cover of it? And I said, yeah, and I was real happy with how it turned out, so I asked them permission to put it on my own record.
Well, from a Canadian connoisseur to a Tennessean who is also a connoisseur of Neil's tunes, you did right by it.
Thank you.
Seriously.
It was very important to me to do that. I can't even articulate what his music has done for me.
AshleyCleveland.com is the website, and thoroughly enjoyed our time. Thank you very much, Ashley.
Oh, you're welcome, Drew. Thanks for having me.
We look forward to you visiting us sometime in the near future up here.
Oh, that would be awesome. I would love to come back to your beautiful, clean city.
All right, The Needle and the Damage Done off her CD, Second Skin. Good to chat with you, Ashley.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
I caught you knocking at my cellar door. I love you, baby, can I have some more? Oh, the damage done. I hit the city and I lost my band. I watched the needle take another man. Gone, the damage done. Set in sun.